It's time to get spooky. Welcome to the show. Let's go.
Hello, and welcome back to the Spooky Scary Podcast.
What's your name?
Oh, mine. Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Chris. And clearly, as you can tell, we are severely sleep-deprived, but back to create you some content for this a lovely week of whatever the fuck it is.
I was like, you know what? They know our names by now. We don't believe in new listeners anymore. You know who the fuck I am. Let's go.
That's fair. Honestly, I'm here for that.
No, we love new listeners. Hi, new listeners. I'm Kath.
And for those of you who aren't new listeners and are already complaining about the fact that we've been back for 2 weeks and aren't adhering to our posting schedule that we stated, listen, we know. We promised one and we aren't adhering to it, but...
I promised nothing.
That's fair. We are... both working now. Kath is officially back in the classroom this week. And so our vibe is that we're still posting every 2 weeks. Just we're not going to give you a specific day that we're posting on just because.
It'll probably be around Thursday, but like, I don't know. You'll get episodes sometimes. Just like,
give us some time because we're both really busy. And sometimes we just need a couple extra days to make both of our schedules work to get an episode out, but we will be getting episodes out. Just give us a couple extra days. It may not always be on Thursday, but it will come out. I promise.
If you out there listening want us to have a consistent upload schedule, then please share this podcast with all of your friends. And we don't have a Patreon, but maybe one day.
But if you go on our Anchor page, you can donate to us, I think.
Can they?
I think so.
Oh, sick. So go to
whatever
the link in our Instagram bio.
Yeah.
Or in the show notes on whatever podcast place you are listening. If you would like to give us a donation, obviously you don't have to. We do this for the funds, for the lulz. But that would be cool. That'd be sick. Although I do feel bad asking because I'm not going to be like, hey, bitches, we haven't uploaded in 2 weeks, even though we said we would. Anyway, give me your lunch money. we are school bullies. Give us your lunch money.
A free option to support us would be to go on iTunes and give us a little 5-star rating because that supports us and that helps us climb those little iTunes charts and get more people listening to us, which helps us get further along and get more listeners, which is fun, funky, and fresh.
And then maybe one day we could have actual sponsors, and then maybe one day we could upload normally because money makes the world go round. Anyway.
On that little note, we just
when
have
I start
to...
talking about work and money, I get depressed. So yeah, same. I'm pivoting.
Let's talk about something even more depressing.
I was gonna be like, you know what? Talking about money makes me depressed. Let's talk about something fun, like murder.
Yeah, and I was like, this week we're not doing anything lighthearted because I've been watching a lot of Web of Lies on Discovery Plus recently because I don't know, Discovery Plus has been like, I've been really vibing with it. It's been my go-to like TV show platform, I guess.
My hot take is that there are too many streaming services. There
I agree 100%.
Be so goddamn many.
The only people reason like, I have so many is because show? My dad pays for them. And I'm like, I'll take your login gladly.
I use my parents' Netflix, but they don't have anything else. So I pay for Hulu. And then I feel bad because Lexi, who's my roommate for listeners, she has all the... she has like a bunch of different, like she has Disney Plus and HBO Max and Paramount Plus and all this stuff. And I'm like trying to share some stuff, but like she has her own Netflix, she has her own Hulu, but like she lets me use her streaming platforms. And I'm like, we could go halvesies. Like, I want to help, but also like, I mean, if you already got them,
right?
Thank you. I will.
I'll gladly partake.
I appreciate that you're sharing your passwords with me, but I have nothing to give in return. because all I have are Netflix and Hulu, which are like the basic bitches of streaming platforms that everyone has.
But like the sad thing about the different streaming platforms is now, like, I don't ever fucking know what platform has what show I want to watch anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, what was I watching again? And I have to like go to each different app and I'm like, nope, not this one. Nope, not this one.
Mm-hmm. You can Google it and it'll usually tell you on the side.
I mean, what streaming that's service true, it's but on. That's too much work. So usually
that's me. Anytime I want to watch, just like, are you ever just like vibing and suddenly you remember a movie you watched like 10 years ago and you're like, I need to watch it right now.
Yes, almost
that always. Happens to me a lot.
I've been like recently, I'm like, you know what I really want to get back into watching? Old DCOMs. But I don't have the patience to decide which one I want to watch. So I've been trying to scroll through Disney Plus and find one. But the issue is, ooh, good idea. The issue is the app doesn't have old DCOMs like advertised on the like app. And I'm too lazy to scroll through all the movies. And I'm like, God damn it, I just want to watch a DCOM. But
I feel that. They should have like a little collect. You know how they have like the Star Wars collection, the Marvel collection.
I agree.
They should have like.
And you know, they probably DCOM do. Collection. I was just too lazy to find it. And, you know, someone's probably listening and like, they actually do. It's right here. And I'm just lazy.
You say that like we know things.
Right? Like, you say that like I have the patience and energy to do anything but the bare minimum at any given time.
You say that like I have a functioning brain and cognitive ability. What?
But on the topic of true crime episodes, another good episode on the topic of something that I said I would never, ever watch ever again is the story of Dr. Death.
Oh my god, your nemesis.
My true nemesis. For those of you who don't know, we're talking about several episodes ago, I recovered this story of Dr. Death.
Chris has tried to tell the story of Dr. Death approximately 6,000 times, and for some reason, it was cursed on this podcast. Like, every time we would record it, something would happen. The audio would get deleted, my internet would go out, something would happen that would interrupt us recording, or that the audio would just get fucked.
My computer crashed a few times when we tried to record it. My microphone just stopped working. The audio was like there but was mute.
One time you did it, but then we had a guest who shall not be named and we had to delete it.
Yeah, one time my notes were done but like got like rewritten somehow and I lost all of my edits that I had done to my notes, so it was like
I think by the time you actually told the story you were like like you ended it being like, that was the story of Dr. Death. I'm never fucking talking about him again.
Yeah, because I wanted to do the story because I like it was a very interesting story of like a sociopathic fucking surgeon. But I was just like, you know,
the Lord himself does not want you to speak of Christopher Dunch.
Apparently. However, there are two different series that just came out on Peacock about Christopher Dunch. One is like a dramatization. I never can pronounce that word properly the first time, and I butcher it.
Dramatization?
Sure. We'll go with that. You're
it's
the
a lot of
teacher.
T's and I's and C's.
Yeah, and
in one word.
My brain just has a mini stroke.
I said there's a lot of T's. I think there's literally one.
Yeah. There's a lot of I's, though. It's got Alec Baldwin and some other people in it. It's really fucking good. And there's also, like, a docu-series with, like, the actual patients and stuff that he injured, and but also really good. If you don't want to watch a TV show about it, you can go listen to our episode about it, where I...
Definitely go watch our episode about it.
Where I complain about how many times it took us to record that fucking episode, because I will never be speaking about him.
And except for right now, in this current moment.
Our shameless... plug, because it's popular, and I'ma plug ourselves.
So for this week, are you gonna tell your story first?
Yeah, I think you went first last week with our little Greek episode moment.
Yes.
And this week we are doing Catfish gone wrong, gone a little awry, if you will, or a lot awry, I guess.
Mine is actually a catfish used for good.
Oh, Good. Mine so is most
definitely
not. We have
some
not.
Variety. You mine have the is... you have the evil catfish. I have the good side of catfishing.
Wonderful, because mine is most definitely not. I was going between two different ones because, like I said, I've been watching a lot of Web of Lies, which is literally just a TV show about catfishing gone wrong, where it's like people who are talking to someone online, usually in a dating capacity or on an online dating website or something, mm-hmm. and they usually end up murdered or something because of this. And really interesting show. There's reenactments, so if you're not into that kind of true crime show, you probably won't like it, because drama and reenactments are kind of cheesy. But I don't know. I vibed with it. It was interesting. But the other one I wanted to do, I just couldn't find as much information about. And I know you said mm-hmm. yours was a little bit shorter, so I wanted to try and find one that was a little bit longer.
Yes.
And this one, I did it because I remember a lot about it because it happened when I was, like, in school.
Yeah, I think I remember the story you're doing, and it was, like, a big social media mm-hmm. thing.
And I remember them showing the video, like, in schools
mm-hmm.
as, like, a big, you know, don't believe, blah, 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 blah. So I'm going to be doing the story of Amanda Todd.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so without further ado, we'll just jump on in, because it's
I would like to say, yes. The other day Chris texted me and was like, he was like, we decided we were going to do like catfishing because we thought that might be an interesting topic. And he goes, I'm going to do the story of Amanda Knox. And I was like, okay, first of all, already done it. Second of all, what the fuck does that have to do with catfishing?
And I was like, wait, no, no, no. That name doesn't sound right, but I was also, like, convinced that that was still the correct name, but also I was in the middle of, like, nowhere and had barely any signal, so I couldn't look it up mm-hmm. to figure it out, and I asked Stevie, like, that was gonna help.
I get it, though. They're both Amandas. They both have one-syllable last names. But in my brain, I was just like, are we doing, like, a Foxy Noxy sequel? Like, what?
And somehow gonna relate it to catfishing?
I was like, is there a sequel to that saga that I just never found out about?
Yeah, I'm gonna somehow add new information and make it relevant again. Part two. Mm-hmm. Whale. Ooh, that was loud. Okay. On September 7th, 2012, Amanda posted a 9-minute video on YouTube titled My Story, Struggling, Bullying, Suicide, and Self-Harm, which showed her using a series of flashcards to tell her experiences with being bullied. The video, however, didn't go viral until after her death on October 10th, 2012. So, spoiler alert for those of you who don't know, Amanda does end up dying, but, I assume most people know the ending of this.
I do think probably right now, just as a... Obviously, we've talked about, like, death and stuff on this podcast a decent amount. It's a true crime podcast. But for this particular episode, there will be some suicide discussion, self-harm, that kind of thing. So if that stuff makes you uncomfortable or you don't want to listen to that sort of story, maybe this isn't the episode for you. You can go listen to our episode about, like, Greek myths from last week, or
just maybe
else.
Skip ahead to Kath's story, because maybe Kath's story doesn't involve as much suicide and self-harm.
There is no suicide or self-harm in my story.
Okay, perfect. So, you know,
there's regular murder, but
well, you know, so you can skip ahead to Kath's story if you'd like good old-fashioned murder. Yeah, I lost my spot. Please, how did I lose my spot when I was one sentence in?
It's a skill. It's a skill you have.
Apparently, yeah. like I said, the video didn't go viral until after her death, but it received over 1.6 million views by October 13th, 2012, so 3 days after her death.
I feel like if you were in, like, middle school, high school around this time, like, it was huge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, yeah, because I was in middle school at the time of mm-hmm. her death because I was 13 in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was in 10th grade. I remember at the time whenever, like, the drinking bleach and everything, and everyone was making fun of it, which, I mean, obviously I'll get to later, but.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I remember, it might just be, like, different demographics of schools or whatever, but at my school, everybody took it, like, very, very seriously.
Oh, yeah. No one at my school took it seriously. Like, at least the people that I could hear talking about it, like, it was not taken seriously. It was very much made fun of, like, even in her, like, because the video, like it said, didn't go viral until after her death. And so even in her death, people still made fun of her and were like, well, she can't even kill herself, right? But I'm getting ahead of myself, so.
Yeah.
During the video, she wrote that while she was in seventh grade, around the same time that she moved in with her father, because her mother and father had gotten a divorce, and at the time, she didn't get along with her mother as well. And her father let her have a bit more freedom on the internet than her mother did. And her father let her have a video camera to video chat with her friends and post videos on the internet. She had a very big love for singing, and she quickly started posting videos to YouTube singing online. Some of her friends convinced her to start using a website to video chat with people online. One of those,
like YouNow or something, or like Omegle kind of thing.
Yeah, that thing. But it was like a group. So she would get on there and sing and receive compliments, but one day a stranger convinced her to flash him on this webcam stream after trying to get her to do it for like over a year, basically.
And she was like in high school?
She was, I think like 13 or 14, so middle school aged.
8th grade, 9th grade-ish. Mm-hmm.
So, like, middle school, freshman year aged. I don't know how old children are. I have no understanding or ability to understand the age of children at any time, so.
No, I feel that. I'm like, I'll look at a 10-year-old and be like, you're like 5, right? I don't know.
Literally. God damn it. I literally have no ability to read, I think, is the problem. Oh, yeah. So the stranger convinced her to flash him and then took screenshots of the images and then later blackmailed her, sending her messages saying that he would give the pictures of the topless photos to all of her friends unless she put on a show for him. Which she refused to do, and then she just kind of, like, deleted social media for a while. But she said that during Christmas break 2010, police came to her house around 4 a.m. to inform her that the photo was circulating on the internet. So he released the photo. She wrote that she started experiencing anxiety, depression, and a panic disorder due to having been sexually exploited online and cyberbullied.
Especially at such a young age.
Right, exactly. Sorry, my cursor wasn't moving my notes. And so, like, not only were people bullying her online, people at her school were constantly attacking her, calling her a slut, saying that she must have enjoyed it, calling her a whore, porn star, all sorts of horrible names that no child should have to endure being called. It's just horrifying. Her family attempted to move her to a new home and to a new school where they thought maybe she would attempt to regain a sense of normalcy. But a year later, Amanda's blackmailer reappeared by creating a Facebook profile that used the topless photo as its profile image and contacting classmates at her new school.
Holy shit.
Again, Amanda was tormented by people at this school. She wrote that she was talking to an old guy friend from that school who messaged her online. He invited her over to his house where they kind of messed around while his girlfriend was on break. But after that, the next week, the boy's girlfriend and a group of about 15 other girls confronted Amanda at school, shouting insults at her, with the boy's girlfriend punching her. Amanda fell to the ground and then laid in a ditch where later her father found her.
That's so sad.
Yeah, her story like just makes me so sad. Because at the time, whenever it was happening, I like didn't really understand the gravity of it.
Yeah.
And then like now, whenever I was watching this episode, you know, as an adult, I was like, Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
The whole like gravity of the situation like really hit me. And I was like, oh my God, this poor girl was just.
Yeah. I think it's especially like, I think when you're that age, like, obviously, you're the oldest you've ever been, so, like, you feel like you have more maturity, but when you're an actual adult, like we are now,
because
mm-hmm. At the time, we were, like, her age,
mm-hmm.
But now, looking at it, it's, like, that's, like, a kid. Right. Like, that's a
child.
Yeah.
There was one part in the show that was, like, she posted videos on YouTube because she loved singing. It was one of her passions. And she just wanted to, her idol was, ooh, hit my mic. Her idol was Justin Bieber. And she wanted to become famous like he did,
mm-hmm.
which was, you know, by posting videos on YouTube. And, so after that attack, she ran home. Or went home with her dad and then attempted suicide by drinking bleach. That's when all that, how those comments started, because she survived and was rushed to the hospital and had her stomach pumped.
Mm-hmm.
She said, quote, it killed me inside and I thought I was actually going to die. That's what she said in her video on one of the flashcards. After returning home, she discovered abusive messages about her suicide attempt posted on Facebook. That's when the comments started about how she couldn't even kill herself properly. She was just a waste of space, a waste of air, things like that. It was called totting whenever you committed or attempted suicide and failed or drank bleach.
Jesus.
Yeah, people were just ridiculously cruel to her.
Mm-hmm.
They got her personal number and were texting her all of these things. They off the internet, random people off the internet she didn't know.
Yeah. It's crazy to me because, like, so for those of you who don't know, I went to Catholic school up until 8th grade, and I definitely was like kind of bullied there, and then in high school I sort of just was like in theater and did my thing, but I'm like, I must have been very like sheltered, because the idea that like I was aware of like bullying and stuff like that obviously, and kind of experienced it to some degree, but the idea that it could exist on like that scale is like crazy to me.
Yeah, like I was definitely bullied a little bit in middle school, more mm-hmm. so than high school. Like once I got to high school, I found my group of friends who made high school bearable. Like I had people in high school who didn't like me, just mostly because I was queer in a small town.
Mm-hmm.
But in middle school, especially being queer, was the main reason I was bullied.
Yeah.
But like it was never to this extent, of course, but
mm-hmm.
like just the thought that it could be to this extent. Because I didn't realize when this happened that it was this big of a deal, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like I'd always kind of been near people who maybe, you know, they would say bad things and, like, bully people. But when it got to the point where it was, like, that person, like... To bully somebody and then to the point where they attempt suicide and then bully them after they attempt suicide is like, do you have any level of empathy at all?
And I mean, even still, whenever at my school, whenever, you know, she had committed suicide and mm-hmm. the video went viral and people were talking about it, they still... People made horrible comments about her at my school. And it just blew my mind. And at the time, I didn't understand, you know, the whole gravity of it. But teachers just kind of were like the bare minimum of, you know, this is why you don't bully. Blah, blah, blah. And then students were kind of like, well, maybe she shouldn't have been a slut. As if it was still somehow her fault. Like... She was a kid.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, like, real, like, I get that it's, like, kids are kids, and a lot of the times people are mean as, like, a defense system.
Right.
But it is just kind of, like, I feel like the conversation about bullying is always, like...
So half-assed.
Yeah, because it's kind of, like, well, it seems like common fucking sense, doesn't it? Like, why do you think it's fun to be mean? Like, are you that, like, bored? That you need to, like, just, like, go be mean to people. Like, get a fucking hobby, Johnny.
Like, perhaps we don't bully someone until they feel the need to kill themselves, maybe.
Yeah, I feel like... this is why I can't be a parent. Because I'm the type, like, I feel like if I had a kid and they were being bullied, or if they were bullying someone, God forbid, I just would, like... go completely the other way, where it's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, bully your bully.
Right? Like, bully him back.
Well, I'm just like, I feel like if that's what, like, if your idea of fun is, like, being mean to other people and, like, I get it. I can, like, talk shit with the rest of them, but there's, like, a difference between, like, talking shit and, like, saying something that's, like, intentionally cruel.
Right, exactly.
You know? Like, there's a difference between, like, God, Rebecca is so annoying. I don't know Rebecca, by the way. And, like, fucking punching someone in the face and leaving them in a ditch.
Exactly.
And, like, mocking their suicide attempt. Like, not in the same fucking sphere. And I feel like if you're in that latter group, like, you really need somebody to, like, sit you down and be like, somebody has made a lot of mistakes raising you. Clearly something is wrong here. Because, like, are you a sociopath? What the fuck are you doing? Exactly. Like, that's fun for you? If that's fun for you, something has clearly gone awry in your brain. Anyway.
But the tormenting did not stop there, because in March 2012, her family moved to a different city to try and start new again, but Amanda could not escape the past still. According to her mother, quote, every single time we moved schools, he would go undercover and become a Facebook friend. What he did was he went online to the kids who went to the new school and said that he was going to be a new student, that he was starting school the following week, and that he wanted some friends, and could they be friend him on Facebook. He eventually gathered people's names and sent her video to the new school, including students, teachers, and parents.
Jesus.
6 months later, further messages and abuse were still being posted to social networking sites. With her mental state worsening, she began to engage in self-mutilation and cutting. Despite taking her prescribed antidepressants and receiving counseling, she overdosed and was hospitalized for 2 days.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like, I don't know, like, obviously medicine can be very helpful to some people, like antidepressants, anti-anxiety medication, stuff like that. But when it's a situation like this where it's like there's clearly an external factor, like there's, it's not just like, oh, she has depression. It's like,
right, exactly.
There's all this shit happening that is like causing it. So like at that point, like what is medication going to do
when there's literally people like harassing her every single time she leaves her house?
Like, she basically has a stalker who is distributing child pornography of her in like a very aggressive manner. Like, she basically has somebody who's made it their mission to ruin her life. So like, maybe it's, I don't know. I don't know, like, if like the police were involved at this point, or
were,
if they ever gotten involved.
They said because it was, there's, they said because it was online that they couldn't really do much, and because she had agreed to it, it was kind of like a...
That's interesting, because I thought...
They like, didn't really start investigating it until after her death, basically. Mm-hmm.
Because I was under the impression, you know, obviously she... there, like, there's the argument of, like, oh, well, she consented to it, but if she's underage, like, underage people can't consent. It's mm-hmm. child pornography, whether she consented at the time or not, so... But I guess, yeah, it was 2012. That was before, really, like, now we have kind of these concepts of, like, revenge porn and stuff like that. Like, if you consent to taking a nude photo for one person, that does not mean that you consent to having that fucking distributed.
Exactly. And, like, I mean, also, in 2010, parents didn't really have an understanding of what was, like, lurking on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
As well, like, the internet was kind of still this new idea, and mm-hmm. this idea that, you know, strangers could be behind the face of these teenage boys on the internet was still kind of this, you know, newer thought. And
yeah, and I feel like a lot of the education around it kind of was similar to the way, like, you know how when, like, schools or parents or whatever give sex education, but instead of actually educating about sex, they just preach, like, abstinence only.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, and, like, obviously that's ineffective, because then if somebody finds themselves in a situation where they are having sex, they have no fucking idea what they're doing. Exactly. Or how to protect themselves. It's, like, kind of a similar thing where I feel like at the time, my memory of it, I remember I wasn't allowed to have MySpace was a thing at the time. I was not allowed to have a MySpace. I kind of was a little young for that anyway, but I remember my parents being like, no MySpace, no Facebook, no whatever. And I remember being in eighth grade and everybody I knew had a Facebook, and I like begged my mom to let me have a Facebook, and she finally did. And she every week would be like, let me see your Facebook. And she would look through it, and she had no concept of it. So like, there was this one time a friend of mine commented on one of my statuses and they were cursing, and my mom started yelling at me for cursing. And I was like, Mom, it's not me. My friend commented. But that was a tangent. Anyway, I feel like there wasn't very much of a conversation about internet safety and mm-hmm. how to protect yourself online. It was just like, don't talk to strangers.
And it's like, well, how do you know it's a stranger?
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. Like, the catfish wasn't a term. Like, you didn't mm-hmm. know what a catfish was. Like, they're a child, you know? They see a cute boy and they're like, oh, this is a real person.
He says he goes to my school.
This is a cute person going to my school. How do I know he doesn't actually go to my school?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what a lot of this show talks about, because unfortunately, you know, a lot of the victims are children. Like, there are show mm-hmm. episodes where the victims are adults, but a lot of the victims are younger children, and it's because a lot of the parents of the, or caregivers of the child were like, I didn't know at the time just how dangerous mm-hmm. the internet could be.
I do kind of really worry about, like, I keep thinking about Inside, and specifically the, like, Welcome to the Internet song. And, like, it is crazy how I'm, like, a little nervous. And I don't try to, like, I'm, like, obviously, I'm not a parent. I'm not trying to, like, I know there's a lot of, like, parent shaming with, like, people being like, you let your kid, like, use iPads. And I'm like, I don't think you're, like, an inherently bad person if you let your kid use an iPad. But I do think, like, what is it doing to, like, little babies' brains if they're spending like 5 hours a day on an iPad.
Right. Well, I know, like, so my aunt does that, and she has like kid-specific tablets that she only lets them use during like car rides and trips and stuff, and like during mm-hmm. specific times, and it's more so for like their sake rather than the kids' sake, and it's so they mm-hmm. can have peace and quiet, and it's for like doctor's appointments and like car rides, and it's just so to give them, and it's like got educational stuff on it, so it's like mm-hmm. and I'm like, that's smart, that's the good
yeah
way
and like
of
that's one
it.
Thing
but like then just giving your like, kid a fucking iPad to just play whatever the fuck, like whenever it's just got like educational
like,
shit on it and like just YouTube for kids and just educational shit, but whenever mm-hmm. you're just like letting your kid rot their brain at 6 months old.
I will say though, for anybody who maybe doesn't know this, YouTube for kids, if you're gonna let your kid watch YouTube for kids, you should probably still be like in the vicinity, because it's not like super well vetted. It's just YouTube, but they try to filter out anything that's not kids content, but the kids content is determined by an algorithm. So there are people who are just uploading these videos that is just like random nonsense that is like specifically tailored so the algorithm thinks it's kids content. And like, then you have little, like not even a year old babies just like watching these videos over and over again. And I'm not saying that's like dangerous, but like,
at the same time,
I do
it's also
think
filling a child's head with, like, nonsense.
Absolute nonsense. Like, and I'm just, like, developmentally, like,
that
what is that going
that
to
great.
Do? And a lot of them have, like, weird sexual things. Like, it's like, Elsa got pregnant with Spider-Man's baby. Like, that kind of weird shit. Have you ever gone down, like, the
I've seen,
YouTube
like,
kids
screen grabs of it, but I've never, like, actually watched it.
Shit gets weird. And there's a lot of stuff where it's, like knockoff versions of like characters, so they'll have like Mickey and Minnie, but then it's like there's like weird sexual and like violent things happening, not to the point where it's like obscene, but enough to the point where it's like, this probably isn't something I, like, a fucking 8 month old should be watching.
Yeah,
anyway, internet safety is important.
Excuse me. So Amanda was taunted by other students for that suicide attempt. She was also taunted for her low grades because she had a learning disability.
And obviously it's probably hard to get good grades when you have so much shit going on.
Mm-hmm. She also was hospitalized for treatment for her severe depression. Another quote from her mother was, "It didn't really help that after she got out of the hospital recently, some kids had started calling her psycho and saying she had been in the crazy hospital. She went to therapy. She went to the hospital. She had counseling. She was on a good track. On the day she gets out, that happens. I shake my head and I think, are kids really that nasty? Do they really not think, what if it was them?" On October 10th, 2012, at about 6 p.m., Amanda was found hanging at her home. At the time of her death, Amanda was a 10th grade student at CAB Secondary School in Coquitlam, Canada, a school that caters to students who have experienced social and behavior issues in previous educational settings. So, now let's get into the investigation and all mm-hmm. that good stuff.
Yes.
Because, like I said, the investigation and everything didn't start until after her death, but this is where it gets angering because, well, we'll just get into that in 12 seconds. Preliminary investigation by the British Columbia Coroner Service showed that Amanda's death was a suicide. The cause of death was reported in some media as hanging, but the exact cause of death had not been released. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police and British Columbia Coroner Service put 20 full-time investigators on the case. The Coquitlam and Ridge Mountain serious crime teams cooperated in a full investigation, conducting interviews and examining factors that may have contributed to Todd's death. Investigators are reviewing content at social media sites and actively monitoring pages. But then it comes out that the Canadian National Organization, CyberTip.ca, have reported having received a tip about Amanda nearly a year before her suicide. The anti-child exploitation group stated that in November of 2011, a concerned citizen reported that images of her were in circulation on the internet. The information was provided to law enforcement as well as child welfare agencies. According to CBC News program, the Fifth Estate, the RCMP were repeatedly informed that the juvenile was not being sexually extorted or was being sexually extorted by an adult male. And in response, the RCMP told the family there was nothing that could be done about it.
So fucked up. Mm-hmm. Especially because, like, I get that it's, like, maybe harder to find evidence when a crime takes place on the internet, but it's, like, not impossible. Like, there are, like, these fucking people, like, internet sleuths who can figure out so much shit. Like, it's not like it's actually that impossible. It's
also, just, like,
people basically being lazy.
Literally after watching 8 seasons of this show and seeing them doing it episode after episode after episode, literally finding mm-hmm. these internet people by tracking down their IP address and everything mm-hmm. and proving how they do it episode after episode by going through forensic data and literally just downloading computer evidence and
mm-hmm.
spending months combing through computer data. Don't sit there and tell me there's nothing that can be done about it until after a child's dead.
Yeah, like, there's digital evidence.
According to the Ontario Provincial Police, however, the crime of sextortion can be investigated quite successfully. Following investigation by Facebook Security Unit, whose report was forwarded by U.S. authorities to the Child Exploitation and Online Protection Center attached to the British National Crime Agency, and then to Dutch authorities, in January 2014, Dutch police arrested a man in a case involving multiple victims in the Netherlands, UK, and Canada, having installed spyware on his computers, chilling chat logs of extortion, numerous images of child pornography, and 5,800 bookmarked names that served as a database of potential victims and their social networks were found.
Jesus Christ.
In April 2014, it was reported that Dutch authorities charged a 35-year-old man of a dual Dutch and Turkish citizenship, identified as only as Aiden C. within the Netherlands in accordance with Dutch privacy laws, with indecent assault and possession of child pornography. That same month, the RCMP announced that the man had been charged with extortion, internet luring, criminal harassment, and possession and distribution of child pornography for his alleged offense against Todd and other child victims, both male and female.
It's just, like, what has to be, like, fucking wrong with you that you're, like, not only am I gonna, like, just be a pedophile, but also I am going to, like, ruin the lives of these children who I don't even fucking know or, like... Like, literally just, like, what the fuck?
Like, I'm not going to stop at just, like, trying to get these photos of underage children. I'm also going to just absolutely annihilate their fucking lives.
Yeah, and, like, for, like, not that, like, I don't know. Not that it would be, like, better if there were, like, a motive or if, like, you knew them or whatever. But, like, something about, like, the idea that somebody would do something like that just for literally no reason is, like, very chilling.
Oh, no, don't worry, it gets worse.
Oh, great. Can't wait.
Todd's mother thanked the police, but also said that she believed more than one person was involved. On January 28th, 2015, CBC News stated that Aiden Coban, that was his last name, had written an open letter proclaiming his innocence, stating that he was innocent of all charges, that he did none of the things that he is charged with.
Okay.
Dutch authorities dropped some of the child pornography charges in October of 2015. His case went to trial in February of 2017 and concluded on March 16, 2017. He faced 72 charges of sexual assault and extortion in the Netherlands involving 39 alleged victims, 34 young women, and 5 men in countries as various as Britain, Canada, Norway, and the U.S., some of whom had been harassed for years. Eventually, he was convicted and sentenced on the Dutch charges of internet fraud and blackmail. He faces 5 separate Canadian charges related to Amanda. Herself was not one of the 39, and is anticipated that he would be extradited to Canada no sooner than the middle of 2018 while serving his Dutch sentence of 10 years and 8 months. Carol Todd expressed relief at the sentence. In December of 2019, it was reported that Canadian authorities were preparing for extradition, but the extradition was delayed until December of 2020 due to problems obtaining travel documents for Aiden and his lawyer, Robert Malowitz. Mm-hmm. Aiden continues to maintain his innocence. It was reported that he's looking forward to clearing his name in Canada despite the strong evidence against him. A pretrial conference was set to begin on February 12, 2021, but unfortunately, there's a limited publication report in effect for his hearing until a verdict has been reached. So
There's also probably some like COVID
shit. Delays. So until a verdict has been reached, the press can't report on any active cases. So I don't know what his extradition and all of that has been done, but presumably he will be found guilty. Todd's suicide received widespread international media coverage because Carol posted a thing on her Facebook after her suicide, basically being like, my daughter committed suicide today, and then shared a link to her YouTube video and an email address asking for any tips. Within 24 hours of the appeal, over 400 tips were received, but the RCMP stated that its investigation was hindered by the amount of false information and online postings after Todd's death and by scams claiming to raise money for her family. On October 19th, 2012, a series of vigils was held across Canada and internationally to remember Todd and other victims of bullying. A minute of silence was observed by 250,000 students in the Toronto School Board District. The same day, Todd's mother was a guest of the 2012 We Day event in Vancouver a week after Todd's death. Bullying has been scheduled as a topic before Todd's death and was addressed by speakers Magic Johnson, musician and anti-bullying advocate Demi Lovato, and British Columbia Premier Christy Clark. Initially, Amanda's mother was denied entry to an anti-bullying conference for fear that her presence would upset the other attendees, but later, she was invited to attend.
That's so weird. Why would they, like, be like, no?
I don't know. On November 18, 2012, 600 people gathered at a final farewell ceremony for Amanda at Red Robinson Show Theater in Coquitlam, near her home. Carol Todd told the gathering that her daughter had left behind a larger-than-life message that had sparked the world and has made it open its eyes, its heart, its ears, and its hearts.
Ears, eyes, hearts, mouths.
Her suicide also gained the attention of internet hacking and activist group Anonymous, who alleged that a 32-year-old man was behind the blackmailing and tormenting of Amanda.
And they were right?
No.
Oh. I thought Aiden was.
They were.
Oh, did they?
They
said a specific person?
They published this man's address and name, resulting in this man receiving online threats of vigilante justice. But after investigation of the tip, police determined that the allegations were unfounded and said that false information that is being spread by people who appear to be trying to use Amanda's story to do harm or make a profit was one of the challenges they faced. According to an interview with the Vancouver Sun, the publication of the identity on social media sites resulted in over 50 emails and thousands of Facebook death threats. A member of Anonymous had attempted to dissuade the group from publishing the information, saying that they had the right person, but the address had belonged to someone else, not the target.
Well, you can't win them all. And I don't think, I think Anonymous is like it's not really like a super, from what I've heard, it's not like a super really like tight-knit group. Like, I don't think they like have like weekly meetings or anything.
Right,
like
exactly.
I think they kind of operate a little independently.
After Todd's suicide, more than 1 million Facebook users have interacted with her Facebook memorial page. Mingled among this positive supports and comments are attacks and images from strangers and people claiming to be her former classmates. After one man's derogatory Facebook comments about Todd's death were reported to his employer, the employer chain basically was like, we fired him.
Well, I'm just like, how fucking stupid do you have to be? Like,
On October 19th, 2012, police in New Zealand said they were questioning a 17-year-old boy from Raglan who allegedly posted inappropriate and disturbing images on a memorial page for Amanda. Police removed the images and shut down the boy's Facebook page. Amanda's suicide started the drink bleach meme, as we discussed earlier. And apparently a meme, she was associated in a meme about the Suicide Squad movie, but I haven't seen that one, so.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I have no idea what that's about.
That's so, like, I mean, like, obviously cruel, but, like, also just, like, random.
Right.
Like.
Carol Todd established the Amanda Todd Trust at the Royal Bank of Canada, receiving donations to support anti-bullying awareness education and programs for young people with mental health problems. A week after Amanda's death, ABC News reported that fraudulent websites had been set up claiming to solicit donations, quoting a statement by RCMP Sergeant Peter Thyssen, "Taking advantage of a family's grief is despicable. We want to get the word out there that there is one real account and anyone who is interested can make a donation at any RBC branch to the Amanda Todd Trust account." It has since been incorporated as a nonprofit colloquially known as Amanda Todd Legacy, with a particular outreach on the mental health issues of adolescents on occasions such as World Mental Health Day on October 10th. The Amanda Todd Legacy Award was established in conjunction with the Douglas College Foundation in 2016, and three students are awarded $1,000 annually toward their studies. Amanda Todd Legacy and Carol Todd have also participated in LGBT advocacy under the aegis of Kids Help Phone, Canada's 24-hour hotline for youth in crisis. Carol Todd is close friends with Leah Parsons, the mother of Rataya Parsons, and they frequently network on cyberbullying issues. The two women often have speaking engagements about their respective daughters with an emphasis on respect, acceptance, forgiveness, and dignity. On March 24th, 2018, composer Jocelyn Morlock won the Juno Award for Classical Composition of the Year for a piece inspired by Amanda Todd, and she was joined on stage by Carol Todd. And Amanda Todd has also been the impact for some legislative changes in Canada. In 2012, Parliamentarian Danny Morin of the New Democratic Party introduced a motion in the House of Commons of Canada. I don't know what most of those words mean because I'm not Canadian, so thank you, Wikipedia, for all of that.
I think they have like a parliament system.
Yeah. The motion proposed a study of the scope of bullying in Canada and more funding and support for the anti-bullying organizations. It also intended to lay the groundwork for a national strategy to prevent bullying, because he himself had experienced bullying in high school. In November 2013, Justice Minister Peter McKay of the Conservative Party introduced Bill C-13, anti-cyberbullying and revenge porn legislation. Carol Todd criticized it, warrantless access provision saying, I don't want to see our children victimized again by losing privacy rights. The definition of cyberbullying itself has been a matter of considerable debate, as have the bill's privacy provisions, particularly in regard to encryption technologies. It went into effect on March 9th, 2015. It had largely been promoted as protecting minors, but applies to all ages. And that is the horrible story of Amanda Todd and the warning of internet safety and why you should treat people with kindness, perhaps, because maybe don't be a dick to people.
A concept.
You know, it's not that hard. You know, treat people with kindness. It's a lot easier than it is to, you know, be a dick to people. Maybe.
It's such a fucked up story.
And there were like, so many parts of it that I just didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Like, I never knew, I think, because, as you said, like, they, the video went viral and kind of was a big news thing in, like, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't arrest the guy until... You said a while later.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time they act, there was actually any sort of like, I guess resolution isn't really the right word, but like any sort of updates. Like
we were all almost adults. Like we were all like 18.
Yeah, and I feel like it's kind of one of those things where like, you know, the justice system moves kind of slow, but like people's attention does not. Right. So you know, if something's in the news, like people aren't really gonna. Think about it a few years later when there actually is more updates.
Especially because, like, especially for us, the Amanda Todd case, it went viral because it was bullying and everything and she committed suicide, but then the justice that her case got isn't going to reach us over here because it happened in Canada.
Yeah.
So the arrest of her case, like, her perpetrator isn't going to make news over here because he was arrested in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're not gonna... That's not gonna make news.
So, it's good to have an update, at least.
Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know that part about it.
Yeah, because I remember as, like, when I was however old, like, probably 15, and it was, like, a big story, when the video was going viral and everything, the story was just, like, somebody has been, like, blackmailing her. Nobody knows who.
And it's just kind of like, oh, well, if people didn't bully her at school, then maybe she'd still be alive. But that's not the whole story. Like, if someone hadn't been relentlessly tormenting her online, maybe her people at school would have had no reason to bully her.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, still, people shouldn't bully people regardless of what people are posting online about you. But, like... Had she not have had this, like, fucking creep on the internet thousands of miles away stalking her online and blackmailing her, she could have had a normal childhood.
Yeah. Well.
On that note.
On that note.
Happy murder time?
Well, it's not happy. It's still sad.
That's fair.
My story also kind of came from me watching something. There is a documentary on Netflix called Why Did You Kill Me? That I watched, and then, you brought up catfishing, and I was like, that reminds me of something. So I'm going to be telling you the story of, Crystal Theobald.
I feel like I've heard of this.
But
only
have.
Vaguely, so, like, please tell me everything.
I think the documentary was really, like, what kind of made it more known, because I couldn't find a lot of information about it in, like, articles and stuff, and all of the articles that I found were, like, as you probably heard in the recent Netflix film, so it kind of all came back to, like, the Netflix documentary.
You're like, great, thanks, perfect. I watched this documentary already, so I guess that's my research, and that's where it's
so
coming from.
I got it. Yeah, so Crystal Theobald was a 24-year-old mother of two young daughters, and they lived in Riverside, California. She had owned a business with her ex-husband, but after their divorce, Crystal and her children moved in with Crystal's mother, Belinda. So Belinda is important. Remember Belinda. Crystal had a very close relationship with her family, especially Belinda, who was her mother, and then her brother, Justin, and she also had younger cousins who she was very close with.
Can't relate.
Yeah, so she was a very family-driven person, real close with the whole fam, which ended up being very important to this story. So on the evening of on the evening of February 24th, 2006, Crystal and her family decided to go out together. I think they were like going out to, they had gone out to dinner or something like that. They took separate cars. So the car situation is a little confusing to me, but basically they took separate cars. Belinda was driving the first car, and then in a second car that was following Belinda's car, Crystal's boyfriend, whose name was Juan, was driving that second car, and then Crystal and her brother Justin were passengers. And the car that Belinda was driving looked pretty similar to the car that Juan was driving. So they were both like SUV kind of cars. At about 8:40 p.m., both cars stopped at an intersection. So Belinda pulled up to the intersection, and then Juan pulled up behind her. Again, Crystal and Justin are passengers in the second car. A moment after they pulled up to the intersection, someone nearby exited a white SUV, approached the second car, and then opened fire through the windows.
Why?
That is the question.
I guess that's what the title of the documentary is. That's fair.
Yeah. So it was very random. Obviously, they were just like 1 second driving, waiting at a stoplight, and then all of a sudden there are bullets going through their windows. So Juan and Crystal were both shot. Juan was shot in the abdominal area, and Crystal received multiple gunshot wounds, including one to the head. So Justin was the not shot, so he got behind the wheel and he drove them to a convenience store right down the street because it was 2006, so they didn't have cell phones, I'm assuming. So they drove to this convenience store to get help, and there is this like heartbreaking CCTV footage from outside the convenience store that you can kind of see Juan get out of the car and he's clutching his side, and then Justin is like screaming for help, but he's holding Crystal like in his arms because she'd been shot in the head, so she was unconscious at this point.
Sorry if you just heard that thump in the background. My lizard was trying to jump up into the window and missed and just jumped into the printer. So if you just heard a little thump in the background, that's what that was.
That was Scorpius just living his best life.
Yeah, and failing.
Juan was able to recover from his injury, but unfortunately, Crystal did pass away 2 days later in the hospital.
Not Crystal.
So, yeah. So the police ruled it as like a gang-related drive-by shooting, but they weren't really able or confident that they would be able to identify or apprehend Crystal's killers, since it was like a very quick attack that was seemingly random and they didn't really have any evidence to go off of. Belinda and Justin both witnessed the attack. So Belinda saw it like in her fucking rearview mirror, which imagine how terrifying. You're just sitting there in your car, your daughter and your son are in the car behind you, and then all of a sudden you look in your rearview mirror and you just see like people shooting into your children's car.
Yeah, that's kind of must be kind of horrifying.
Yeah. So she watched the whole thing happen. Obviously Justin was in the car, so they both saw the attack, and they described that one man exited like a white SUV to open fire. And they said that possibly other men were also shooting from the car, and then obviously an additional man was driving the car. So it was a group of men.
Mm-hmm.
Crystal's brother, Robbie, so she had another brother named Robbie, who told the police that earlier that day, he had actually driven that car. So the car that they were basically kind of all sharing cars. So the car that was shot into, earlier in the day, Robbie had taken that car to drive his daughter to her mother's house. and he said that when he left the house, he noticed that a white SUV was following him. Scorpius having a moment.
Yeah, he just... he tried to get back in his tank in the weirdest fucking way possible, and all of a sudden, he's just dangling from his fucking thermometer on the back of his tank.
Oh, no.
And now he's just, like, angrily huffing and puffing on his cork like I did something wrong.
We've all been there, Scorpius. It's okay.
Have we?
I struggle to get out of my tank every day.
That's fair. I also struggle to get out of my tank. Anyway, let's talk about these people struggling to get out of their tank. Bad segue. I apologize.
Anyway. You tried. You tried. So, yeah, he says that he gets in the car. He's driving, trying to drop off his daughter, and he notices this white SUV is following him. So Robbie said that he sped up and tried to evade the SUV, but it started, like, speeding after him. And there was kind of like a little mini car chase that went down for, like, 5 minutes. But eventually Robbie was able to lose the car, and then he kind of just drove around aimlessly for a while until he was positive that the car was gone and not following him anymore. And then he dropped off his daughter. But I guess after it happened, he kind of just, not like forgot about it, but he was just kind of like, oh, that was creepy, whatever, and then like went on with his day. Which, I mean, I get, like, I've kind of had a situation before, and I feel like a lot of people have, where you're like driving and then you're like, I think this car's following me. And then you just kind of drive around for a while until you lose them. And then you're like, okay, hated that. I'm going to go home now.
Yeah, because you're like, well, maybe they weren't. Maybe I'm just being paranoid. Maybe yeah. They just happened to be driving the same exact direction as me for a little bit.
Even though I made 4 right turns. Maybe they also just were lost. I don't know.
Yeah, you
know?
Maybe they just happened to make 4 right turns with me.
Yeah. So I think it was kind of one of those situations where he was like, that was creepy, but, you know, whatever.
It's over now, so.
Yeah. So then he, you know, took the car back home, went on with his day. And then, obviously, when they said that a white SUV had the people who shot this car, he was like,
isn't that
this
what
thing
I
happened
me? Isn't that what I followed me?
Yeah. So Robbie passed on that information, but Belinda felt that the police were not getting enough evidence on their own, so she took matters into her own hands. So with the help of Crystal's younger cousin Jamie, and Belinda and Jamie both talk in the documentary, Belinda made MySpace accounts where she used Crystal's pictures. And I would just like to say,
oh my God, Crystal, I've seen this documentary.
Have you?
Yeah. I was like, this sounds really familiar. Mm-hmm. And then whenever you said that, I was like, oh my God, I've seen this documentary.
I think it's important to note, Crystal was fucking beautiful. Like, she was so pretty.
Yeah, she was.
So makes sense that she used her pictures. So she uses Crystal's pictures and then the fake name Angel. And Jamie, who I think is literally like 14 years old, but I guess she knows how to use MySpace, and Belinda, the mother, start, specifically Belinda's doing the talking, but Jamie helped with setting up the account. So they use these fake accounts to reach out and try to talk to local gang members. So there are multiple gangs in the area. Two of which are relevant to the story, are the 5150 gang, and then their rival gang is the MD gang. So, using the Angel account, Belinda was able to connect with multiple members of the 5150 gang, two of which she was able to actually get close enough with to ask them about the shooting directly. So, one of these 5150 members that Belinda spoke to was named William Sotelo, and he was called Jokes. As, like, his nickname, I guess. So, basically, Belinda was catfishing Jokes. And through catfishing him, Belinda found out that he owned a white Ford Expedition SUV and eventually was kind of able to get him to give some information about the shooting. So, Belinda passed this information on to the police, who then were like, oh, thanks for doing our job for us, basically.
Yeah.
And they brought Jokes in for a voluntary witness interview. So... because all they really knew at the time was, like, that he maybe saw it or knew some information and that he drove a white Ford SUV.
Yeah.
So they couldn't, like, arrest him at that point, but they were they actually got him to voluntarily give an interview.
Well, that's nice. How kind of
during
him.
This, yeah, well, during this interview, he didn't incriminate himself. He kind of, I think he, like, admitted to owning the car, but he was like, I wasn't there, I didn't drive it. But he did name fellow 5150 member named Julio Heredia, or his, like, I guess gang name was Lil Huero. He basically said that this guy was the gunman in the shooting. So they didn't have any evidence to make an immediate arrest of Jokes, so the police released him, and then he promptly fled the country and just disappeared.
As one does when they're innocent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a super innocent thing to do. Belinda, however, was still, you know, busy on her MySpace account doing the job of an entire police force single-handedly. And according to the 5150 members that she spoke to, in the early morning hours of February 24th, 2006, there had been an altercation where members of the MD gang had shot at 5150 members before fleeing in a car that was very, very similar to the one that Crystal, Justin, and Juan were driving that night. So it was, like, similar make and model. It looked kind of the same.
Mm.
So the members of 5150 that were involved in Crystal's death had basically been driving around all day looking for these MD members. So they had followed Robbie Theobald earlier in that day, and they had basically spent all day driving around looking for this car. They followed Robbie, lost him, and then they were at this intersection and they saw two cars that both looked like the car they were looking for, the second of which was the one that Crystal was in. So they shot the car under the belief that there were MD members inside of the car.
That's so horrifying. Actually,
yeah, like, it was completely random. It was literally just
wrong place, wrong time for Crystal and her family.
Yeah, her car just looked like this other car. So I couldn't actually find a lot of information about this, like, specifically what happened, but apparently Belinda was talking to a lot of these gang members, and trying to, like, find information specifically that she could give to police. But she was also obviously very angry,
mm-hmm.
and
well, rightfully some so. Level.
Yeah, obviously. Like, she's like, I don't really care about your stupid gang war bullshit. My daughter is dead because of
you.
Because of why? Because of, like, this stupid shit, like, that I don't care about at all. So she, like, through this catfishing that she was doing, she was actually, like, causing some, like, feuds within the gang. She was, like, causing, like, and she had, like, plans. Like, she was, like, kind of not 100%, like, is the police gonna even be able to get this information, like, do anything with the information that I'm passing on? So she said that she was, like, even one time considered trying to get a bunch of 5150 members to meet at a certain location and, like, try to just kill them herself. Like,
Jesus.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, I get it from the perspective of, like, probably just experiencing, like, rage, you know?
Like, a grieving mother and, like, an incompetent police force, because they're just basically like, well, we're not going to do anything about this. Because it also kind of seems like, I mean, in cities where gangs kind of are a very big threat in the city, the police kind of just, I don't want to say leave them be, but, you know, mm-hmm. with things like this, they're just kind of like, oh, we'll look into it, but
I don't know what we can do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, where when it's like, well, you have an idea of who did it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You may not
I
have
will say,
everything, but
yeah, to the police's kind of credit, there was, so Crystal was murdered in 2006,
mm-hmm.
and in, like, 2007, 2008, in this area of California, there was, like, a big a big crackdown on like gang activity. So there were a lot of raids that were taking place. And some of those raids actually were, by this point, the police were getting a lot of information about the local gangs from Belinda. Like, she was just like catfishing like all these freaking gang members and was just like, hey, police.
Here you go.
Here. And then they would do these raids and they would get more information, more evidence, etc. So police were able to identify two other 5150 members who were in the car during the shooting. And they were actually brothers, William and Manuel Lemus. So the Lemus brothers thankfully cooperated fully with the police in exchange for no charges being pressed. So they were in the car, but
weren't the ones like firing the gun?
Yeah. I believe so.
Allegedly.
It's still a little bit up in the air. Yeah, because the people who were there, the witnesses at the time, were like sure that there was, so one man got out of the car and was shooting, but they were like maybe other people were shooting from the car, so like,
and there wasn't like CCTV footage of the actual shooting, just of them going to the store to like get help after the shooting.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But so yeah, I mean, you can kind of say what you will about the fact that they basically traded information for their own safety, but with the testimony of the Lemus brothers and the other one, other members of 5150, as well as all of the evidence that was uncovered by Belinda and Jamie through MySpace, Julio Heredia was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole for the murder of Crystal Theobald, the attempted murders of both Justin Theobald and Juan Patlin, as well as some additional gang-related charges. He was actually eligible for the death penalty, but Belinda made the decision that she didn't want him to face the death penalty because she didn't think Crystal would want someone killed, and she just felt like personally it was the right thing to do, especially after kind of the interview that I read. It kind of seemed like she was sort of trying to let go a little bit of the
anger that she had towards them.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Or not the anger, because obviously, you can't let go of the anger, yeah, but
like the revenge.
Specifically, the quote that I read was, she said, I finally did the right thing.
That's fair.
So I think like it was kind of just a moral decision.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, Belinda's MySpace catfishing also led to the convictions of more than 10 other 5150 members for crimes such as attempted murder, witness intimidation, and other violent crimes.
Wow.
Yeah. So that is the story of how catfishing can be used for good.
That's honestly really badass, because like, it's so dangerous to go up against a big fucking gang like that. Mm-hmm. And especially in such a fragile state, whenever you just lost your daughter from a gang having, you know, being a victim of a drive-by for something just because your car looks similar to someone who had shot them. Like, nothing for any fault of your own. You were just wrong place, wrong time in a car that happened to look similar to theirs.
Yeah.
And for you to be like, oh, well, the police aren't doing anything, so I'm going to take matters into my own hands and catfish these fucking people to get the information I need to get my daughter justice is so fucking badass.
Oh, wait, I didn't write this down. I think I just, like, wasn't paying attention, but so Jokes fled the country.
Mm-hmm.
And this initially was happening in like 2006, 2007, etc. So he disappeared, he was gone, and he was found 10 years later in 2016 in Mexico.
Oh my god.
He had completely basically restarted a life in Mexico. He had a wife, four kids, etc. Was just like hiding, basically. And he was like brought back to California for like the investigation, for sentencing, etc. And he ended up being convicted of one count of voluntary manslaughter. I think it was, he did sort of like a plea where instead of being charged for, like, all of the things, he said he would plead guilty to just one charge. So he pled guilty, I believe, and he was convicted on one count of manslaughter, which he is currently serving, and it is a sentence of 22 years.
Wow. What a good story to end on after my depressing buffet.
Oh, and I forgot the best part. The person who found out where he was Belinda. She, again, got a tip on MySpace.
Oh, my God.
Or maybe it was Facebook. This yeah, it was 2016, like, so.
Don't Fuck with Cats, part two.
Don't Fuck with Belinda.
Literally, don't fuck with Belinda. Belinda will she'll fucking catfish you and find you out. But on that note, do you have anything more to add for this week's episode?
I do not. That is the story of how Belinda Lane is a badass.
Hell yeah! What a more lighthearted note to end on this week.
Yeah, well, obviously not fully lighthearted. Like, she did experience a devastating loss.
Well, yes.
But to be able to, like,
turn that loss into something positive and take matters into her own hands when the judicial system was failing her and the investigative system was failing her, and be able to bring justice
achieve
to
some
her daughter.
Justice, yeah.
Yeah. It's really, really nice to see. I mean, it's very saddening that she had to do it herself because of how our judicial system is, but it also makes my little heart happy to see
somebody getting some level of justice, because it doesn't always happen.
No, it does not. on that note, hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Join us in 2 weeks for some more content. Apologies that this week the episode wasn't exactly on Thursdays, but like I said, bear with us. We will get the episodes out as quickly as possible. We are busy adults who do this for fun, not for money. So let us keep doing this for enjoyment, and we will keep posting episodes as quickly as we possibly can.
Yes. Probably next week's episode will be a little bit more lighthearted. We usually kind of go back and forth, I think, between the spooky and the scary.
Otherwise, it's dark and depressing every week. And oof.
Yeah, so we're like, let's do a dark and depressing one like every other episode. And then, you know, maybe next week we'll talk about like werewolves or something.
Yeah, you know, keep it light, keep it fun, keep it funky.
Yeah, keep it fresh.
Till next time, that has been Kath.
And that has been Chris.
Bye.
And you have been you. Stay spooky, y'all.
Woo!
Oh, we love a cheer.